It's no secret that Cape Town is foodie haven, and you just need to go around the next street corner to find just another new exciting gastronomic experience. So when we heard about the annual food indaba, we were quite excited to hear what it was all about. So we're going to be chatting today to Ian Harris. He is the event project manager of the annual food indaba, which is a project of the South African Urban Food and Farming Trust. And it's a 2-week program of events that's held in July of each year and brings together role players across the African continent, across the African food system, from policymakers and chefs to retailers and farmers, food scientists, and I'm sure food security specialists and philosophers. Isn't that the best? Because we all philosophize when we eat. So the annual Food Indaba is a great initiative. It's an interesting collective of people, and we're going to be meeting with Ian later today to chat to him about the annual Food Indaba. Ian is the creator of an award-winning Pan-African travel brand called Coffee Beans and its destination management partner called Creative Travel Africa. So Ian, with many irons in the fire, and I'm sure many wonderful stories around food, going to be chatting to us shortly. As I said, the annual Food Indaba, very interesting, exciting concept. And we have Ian now live with us, Ian Harris, who is the event project manager. Ian, a warm welcome to Jet Setting with Janet. I'm so excited to hear what the Food Indaba is about. But before we go to the Food Indaba, I want to hear about Ian Harris. So please tell us, what has the journey been bringing you to this point in your career path? I know you've got a few business interests, and I'm looking forward to chatting to you about that. But please just tell us a little bit about your journey, Ian.
Yeah, I think I studied acting and filmmaking. And when I was at university, I was pretty clear that I was going to become an actor and a filmmaker. Look at me now. I'm neither of those things. But what's been interesting is that even though I didn't become a filmmaker and I didn't become an actor, I think essential qualities of both of those fields are playing out very much in the work that I do. And I think to distill it's a case of I work in in storytelling spaces, and I work on often unusual canvases for stories. So my work in tourism, for example, is very much narrative travel, and it's about using tourism as a format, as a space on which to write and to share stories about the places that people are visiting. So the one business is Coffee Beans, which was started in 2005. And that's a niche tourism business. We take travelers into the homes of musicians and storytellers and poets and cooks and sports people and philosophers and spiritual leaders, etc. And that's designed to give travelers very deep access to the cultural and the human fabric of the places that they visit. So that's kind of, storytelling
Well, there's
at
your
quite a deep
narrative
level.
right there, Ian. There's your
There you
creative narrative
go.
coming through. So
Yeah.
you're melding all of those things very beautifully. And we know that tourism comes alive when you can experience the narrative behind the product or the
Right
experience.
on. And especially in our context on this continent, where tourism has historically been largely designed to exclude people in favor of animals, it's such a huge missing piece of the puzzle. And in terms of what people are really looking for when they travel, which is to have a humanizing experience, to bring people right into the heart of that is not only kind of important as a long-term objective, not just for an operator, but for a nation, for a continent. I think it's just such a beautiful thing to go somewhere and to have a human connection with someone in a context that's fundamentally different to your own. For me, that's, and I'm just speaking for me, but when I go on a vacation, whatever the destination is, I want to find a deep connection to some other human being in a completely different context, as partly to remind myself of just how connected we are, no matter how different we may appear on the surface. That for me is kind of, that's a holiday. Lying on the beach is great. I love to do that. Going hiking, whatever those things are, those are enriching too. But it's that humanizing experience. And I think in a world where technology can connect us very rapidly, but technology can also be a form of isolation. And in a world where AI, and we'll jump to the food endeavor, where AI is starting to become kind of a part of absolutely everything that we do, human connection becomes that much more important, and it's not replaceable. You cannot replace human connection with an algorithm. And so I think that's very important for me, that work remains important. And more than anything else, it's fun. We have a good time doing it.
So very, very important to have fun, because if you don't enjoy what you do, it then just becomes a job, right? And none of us want to just have a job. We want to have exceptional experiences, life-changing moments. And I love the narrative, because your product works best when there's a context and a narrative. And it sounds like you are doing that with the initiative that you have. And interesting to hear that you've come from the creative into actually still a creative environment, because I think that tourism is really a creative industry, because people come together to make stories come alive for visitors, local and international. So it's a wonderful way to showcase what it is that we do, but showcasing not in a negative way, but really offering the experience for somebody to immerse themselves in and enjoy all things that are South African.
All right. And I think, we're not, I think what we want to do, like, and this is for the food endeavor as well as for the travel stuff, we don't want to shy away from the challenging stuff. I think I've always, when it comes to tourism, I've always veered away from making people's dream vacation come true, because, like, as soon as you're responsible for somebody's dream, you're responsible for the Yelp review at the end, or the Hello Peter review at the end, because it's dreams are subjective, and if they don't get realized in exactly the way the person has it in their head, which is largely impossible, it becomes something else. And so I think it's, like, I think the dream is, if there's a dream at all, it's to create opportunities for people to have experiences, and those experiences, they're going to be positive overall. But you also understand that everybody comes with their conditioning, they come with their baggage, they come with a conflict that they had with their spouse that morning before they got in the van and departed to do whatever it is they're doing that day. And how they then experience the experience is mediated through those things that are going on at the time. And so, sometimes they don't have a good time. And I think that's what you have to make place for in your holiday. And I think more broadly, engaging people with the things that they're not necessarily comfortable with is also very important. And in the food endeavor, for example, a lot of what we're dealing with when it comes to issues around food security and access to good nutrition and fair distribution of food, and the role that big food plays in creating challenges in how we eat and what we eat, and the health ramifications of all of that. Those are very important issues to deal with, as well as the joy of Cape Town's food scene. To be a foodie in Cape Town, what an incredible privilege. This is one of the greatest food destinations on earth. But I think
It's
what
like
makes
being
it
Alice in
so,
Wonderland.
it's Alice in Wonderland, but it's Alice in Wonderland knowing that you've got time pressure and that you've got a, there's something else, And I think what intrigues me about Cape Town, and I think more than any other city that I've ever been to when it comes to food, is we do have these realities that kind of coexist of extreme malnutrition and food insecurity and extreme access to foie gras and wagyu and the best kind of food that you can possibly imagine. They live side by side, less than a kilometer apart. And to be able to hold both of those realities at the same time takes quite some gymnastics. But if you can, I think that is so incredibly enriching. So we don't want to run away from anything that is challenging or negative, whether it's at the food endeavor or in tourism. And I think for me, what I find particularly intriguing about tourism is the degree to which tourism does not want to touch on the more challenging stuff. So we'll often hear from our travel partners, just don't get into any of the current politics with these people. Please don't get into the politics, especially when it was in the Zuma era. For some reason, tourism just did not want to talk about Zuma. And for us, it was like, look, we're taking people into the homes of musicians and storytellers and poets. If anything is going to come up, it's going to be politics, because that's what informs all of our lives. And we are not going to steer the conversation to something clean and neat and pastoral. The travelers need to be able to engage. They can say, we don't want to talk about it, And then nobody will talk about it, maybe. But the degree to which they are able to engage with the realities that we are confronting at the destination informs the degree to which they're going to have an ultimately satisfying experience. And I think this is, tourism is full of fear. I mean, life is full of fear, but tourism is full of fear because people are terrified that their clients are not going to have a good experience. And I think, like, people are not always going to have a good experience, and how we deal with the consequence of that is really the more interesting part. And how do people arrive at a new understanding through the travel experience of themselves and the world? I think that's what it's all about. And I think it's similar with the food in Durban, and kind of my work in tourism laid the ground for what I'm doing at the Food in Durban now, because this again is a canvas. We're doing a 2-week event program that is telling stories about the food system in all of its different presentations. And a lot of that is challenges, and a lot of that is joy at the same time. And the degree to which we can grapple with all of them simultaneously without losing our heads is kind of the measure of what success comes out of it.
For sure, absolutely. I think it's a very interesting dichotomy between the narrative, between the political context and, food and Africa. It's such a multifaceted relationship with food because we have first and dire third world conditions that one can only suppose. When it comes to food security, when it comes to scarcity, that there are so many very painful conversations that need to happen. So when you talk about the food in Durban, Ian, I see you bring a lot of role players together. What is a typical day on the agenda of the food in Durban?
But I say that's a difficult one because none of them are typical. But I think if I can distill kind of the essence of a day, it would be staying alive. Production is intense, huh? Production is very intense.
Of course.
Look, we've got 2 weeks, right? And so we've got different experiences or events happening on different days. And I think what's a through line for any of those days, regardless, is keeping a cohesive team together, keeping everybody focused, and keeping everything gracious and logistically aligned. Now, this could sound like waffle, but to give you an idea, like we're doing 2 weeks with about 25 events spread across a 40-kilometer radius in the city. So, this would be one thing if you're doing 3 days at the CTICC, right? Where you've got everything concentrated into one place. It becomes logistically quite simple, even though these things are complex. Having it in one location is simple. Now we're doing it in a very distributed way. And one of the ways that we make that work is that you have a team that really coheres very well. You have a supply chain that is very well prepared. And I think more than anything else in this, you have relationships which are pretty well oiled. And in order for those relationships to be well oiled, you have to spend a lot of time and energy in building and maintaining relationships. And I think this is the key. And this applies to the tourism just as much to the food in Durban. A lot of the breakdown in the systems is in systems of oppression that deliberately break up relationships, right? So apartheid did that. Capitalism is quite successful at that in many ways. It breaks connections down on the basis of economics as opposed to race or any other kind of metric. And so we're always looking at how do we address relationship discontinuities, relationships that are broken in some way. And so a typical day is always geared around how are we making relationships better? And if that is in the team, if it's with the taxi driver, if it's with the shuttle service, we're just always asking. It's like a yes and. When you study theater, a lot of the kind of core work in the early days of training in theater is what's the right word? It's collaboration is not the right word. When you're doing your teamwork in theater, you want to be able to receive something from an actor and then not question it or judge it or send it back. You want to enhance it, embellish it, and then pass it on to the next person who takes it and adds to it and passes it on. So you're always receptive, and then you're always giving to somebody else who's receptive. And so you've got this kind of very generative chain that takes place. And I think a typical day for us in production is how generative are we? What are the ways in which we are generative with each other, with the people that we're working with the spaces that we're in? How are we always leaning into, how can I make this fantastic for you? And it's quite funny, a moment ago I was talking about in tourism, we've never been that interested in making people's dream vacation. But I think in the food space, when we're working with young chefs, for example, emerging chefs, and they are doing a pop-up dining event, part of what we have to do with them on that night, because this is stressful, it's a venue they've never worked in, it's a once-off, so you've got no systems in place to support you, there's no precedent, you're doing it everything on the fly. And our team's directive is do whatever you have to do on that evening to make this chef's dream come true on that night. And if that means that they need a margarita cocktail ordered in from 4 kilometers away, it doesn't matter how bad that might be for the environment. Let's give them what they need so that they can realize their dream on that night. So that's a way out example, but I think you get the idea. We're trying to be generative, and that's what a typical day looks like.
Wonderful. Ian, it's rare for me to have a conversation with somebody that comes from the creative arts. I'm also from the creative arts. I'm a museum management specialist by training, but I work in the transport sector. I run a transport business, which is very diversely different. We also work in tourism, amongst other sectors. And when one talks about food and tours, it's a very delicate balance that one has to be able to articulate what is the real and the actual, and then to be able to balance everything from a responsibility point of view, that how you are made to see, how you represent sectors, that they are ethically and responsibly communicated to people who are coming, especially from other countries, so that they go away with the right impression and don't have a skewed picture of what it is to live in South Africa. It's a huge responsibility. So it's been really wonderful to chat to you, Ian. I'm interested to know about the food in Durban. Is it still on? Is it still running? Has it ended?
Yes, this year's event program finished on Sunday, ran from the 7th of July to the 20th. The theme for this year was artificial intelligence and the food system. And I think even ourselves, we were really grappling with what does it really mean? What is the artificial intelligence piece here? And this was an incredible 2 weeks, really exploring systems of intelligence in the food system. So ancestral intelligence was something that came up a lot. So kind of diving into and getting a perspective on ancestral wisdom, ancestral knowledge. All of these are kind of forms of intelligence that give us a perspective on the foods that we've come from, the disconnect, the breakdown in our understanding of those ingredients, the narratives of those foods. AI is only as good as the data that we give it. And so it doesn't really have a perspective on folklore, because folklore is handed down orally, and I don't think we've really begun to kind of enter that folklore into the digital realm. So a part of
Yes,
the process was us.
knowledge systems are fairly untapped.
They're untapped, and I think this is it was very much a process of kind of getting to grips with what is our intelligence as human beings. What are these values that we convey, these experiences, these histories, these ancestral connections that make us so human? I think also to remind ourselves, because there's a lot of fear at the moment with artificial intelligence, that we are going to be subsumed, that the machines are going to become our overlords. All of those science fiction horror stories that we've been conditioned with over the last few decades. I think it's kind of coming to the fore now as these tools become very deeply embedded in our daily work. And so a lot of the food in Durban was shedding light on the humanity of our data, of our knowledge, of our intelligences, and kind of applying those insights to different spheres within the food space. But this year's done, and we'll release a lot of material over the next few months as we process everything. We recorded a lot, we've documented a lot, we've been training some LMs, so people will be able to go and use a chat function to learn more and discover more about African indigenous foods. But we've also laid out the themes for the next 5 years. So we've already started working on 2026. The theme will be water, and we will look at rivers, oceans, aquifers, and rainfall. and everything to do with that, which is obviously that's all of life. So it's quite a big theme. And then themes for the next few years will include informality. So we'll look at food and the informal sector, informal, sorry, the informal sector and food systems. We're going to look at well-being in 2027. So well-being in the food system. And then leading up to ultimately the last of the 5-year cycle will be 2030, which is the year that the SDGs are supposed to have been realized. So we'll do a review of the SDGs and where we have accomplished and where we have not. So it's really helpful for us to have a kind of a 5-year overview as we plan. What happens is you're planning every year at the same time because all these threads are interconnected. So yeah, we're done for this year, but we're by no means done. The event program is growing a little bit every single year, and I think more importantly than any other growth is we're growing in reach. So we're probably ne never going to have 20,000 people attend the event, but we have 60 million people who engage with issues relating to the event across the different media channels that we work through and work with. So we're very excited about the reach that we have and the potential impact that we can have through bubbling to a mainstream surface, the kind of issues that we're dealing with in the food system and bringing a different consciousness to how we view our connection to all these things. And as my colleague Kurt, who founded the Urban Food and Farming Trust, always says, everybody eats. And so everybody has a vested stake in the food system itself. And I think not many of us really look at it that way, the degree to which what we put in our mouths is connected to absolutely everything. Like I said, water as a topic is kind of all of life, but what you're putting into your mouth is life itself. And so
For
I
sure,
think the more that all of us are eating with some consciousness, and I don't mean that you have to become vegan, it's just some consciousness of what are you putting in your mouth, what it means, where did it come from, who were
for
the people
sure.
that forged this? You know,
A
it's
fascinating
connected to
chat
everything.
here, and certainly one that we could have for many, many hours. But unfortunately, we've run out of time. Wonderful to chat to you, Ian, and looking forward to continuing this conversation some more and keeping abreast of what you're unfolding, which sounds like a fascinating area of work, the food ecosystem. So thank you so much, Ian, for joining us on Jet Setting with Janet today. Been great chatting to you and understanding the impetus behind the food indaba. Wishing you and the
Thank you
team
for.
all the best as you unpack even more over the next couple of years as you lead up to 2030 and the Sustainable Development Goals.
Well, thank you for having me, Janet. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Ian.